Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome, everyone, to the PFF Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, John Macri, Fantasy Analyst here at PFF. And last week, we had a ton of free agency news to go over, so much so that the NFL barely left us much for Wave 2. But there are still some key signings and trades to go over again here and discuss for fantasy purposes. And here to help me break it all down, as per usual, the great Kate Majuk. Kate, how are you today?
I'm doing good. We've got a lot of interesting news, and I'm going to be honest, like this continues to remain the most volatile fantasy football offseason that I could ever remember. I mean, we finally have some movement in the wide receiver market. We even had a trade with my Pittsburgh Steelers. We had a couple trades with my Pittsburgh Steelers, one involving a quarterback, one involving a wide receiver, but there's been some interesting movement. And I got to say, like, the ramifications for several of these teams are kind of earth-shattering, and I cannot wait to react today.
Yeah, there's some fun ones to discuss for sure. And like you said, like the trades as well in there mixed with some of the free agent signings, and wide receivers are going to be kind of the main focus for this week. They were hidden underneath all the running back signings last week. There was only a couple wide receivers to really talk about, but they take the spotlight here this week, and we'll get into it. But before we do, I do want to let everybody know again about the PFF Mock Draft Simulator. It is draft season, so there's no better time to jump in there. Start drafting for your favorite team or for the entire league, however you want to do it. We're going to have a ton of draft content. We already do have a ton of draft content up on the site right now. Pretty much everybody's writing draft stuff. So go in there, utilize the content, create your own boards and rankings, and go have some fun. Make some mock drafts. You could post them on social as well, but you can also get access to a PFF annual subscription by using the promo code 30MDS right now. It'll get you 30% off an annual subscription, and that includes access to all the draft content and all the content that we put up on PFF.com, as well as access to the best mock draft simulator in the league here at PFF. So check it out now. Have some fun. And again, it is promo code 30MDS. All right, let's get into these moves. There are, like you said, a lot of fun ones, a lot of exciting ones to talk about. And before we get into the wide receivers, because they're again, going to be the main event here, we got to start with one that was really exciting. I mean, I think for NFL purposes, it just shakes things up quite a bit here. It's a trade that took place recently. You referenced it at the top, and that was the Pittsburgh Steelers trading for Justin Fields from the Chicago Bears for just a sixth round pick. Justin Fields, obviously a former first round pick after just three seasons in the NFL. Now, Kate, I'm mostly interested in your take on who you prefer now at quarterback for the Steelers, because as we discussed last week, they also signed Russell Wilson. So how are you feeling about Pittsburgh adding Fields to the quarterback room here for 2024?
I have to say, I actually think both on and off the field, this seems to be a really good fit, both culturally, schematically. I think Justin Fields is a perfect fit, especially after bringing in Arthur Smith at offensive coordinator, who, I mean, we've had our gripes with him, obviously, but the man knows how to utilize play action, knows how to utilize a quarterback under center. And I do think that that can fit a lot of what Justin Fields can do. And like, let's not understate the, you know, kind of mentorship that he's going to get from a Super Bowl winning quarterback working ahead of him. I do lean Russell Wilson because I think he's going to bring a lot more stability to the passing game than Justin Fields. And let's be honest. I mean, this is a man who probably was the biggest mismatch in terms of fantasy production versus real life on the football field kind of play, right? Ranked fifth in fantasy points per drop back last season, only behind Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Brock Purdy, and Jalen Hurts. Then it was Justin Fields. And I got to say, I think, you know, in 2023, we did see a step up from Justin Fields as a passer. Obviously, I think, you know, DJ Moore, a huge part of that. But I think, you know, the biggest question mark is, can he hold on to the football? Turnovers have really just kind of marked the trajectory of his career. And that's not what the Pittsburgh Steelers want to do. They want to control the ball. And I think that that's, you know, a part of why they're going to lean Russell Wilson. And obviously they've already said that they're planning to roll with him at quarterback. But I think that that's gonna ultimately, you know, make sure that the edge kind of remains with Russell Wilson here. I don't know that I'm a believer that Justin Fields is ever going to get back into a starting lineup, barring an injury, barring anything. But I do think that this is a really good place for him to hit the reset button, take a step back, and clean up some of these aspects of his game that have generally made it really hard to buy into him as a franchise guy.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. I mean, it does seem like Russell Wilson is going to be the starter there. And I think that makes sense. You know, you just look at experience and his body of work in the NFL. It makes sense that he'd get the nod there. And Justin Fields can just kind of continue to develop because there's at least potential right there, right? And now they have these two quarterbacks with that same potential to have these kind of big games, which is something that they didn't really get the last couple of years, right? From Kenny Pickett. That was one of the struggles, was just getting production out of their quarterback position and turning that into offensive points. And look, both these guys come now with some turnover issues. Russell Wilson more so in recent years than most of his career. But I think it's a fine trade-off to make for a lot of the big plays that you're getting from potentially both these guys. If there is you know, packages that they want to utilize Justin Fields in, for example, that they can still get more out of him, specifically with his legs, right? And like you said, not going to be a starter. His ADP last year was, I think, a top eight quarterback, right? So that's not going to happen again. Russell Wilson is going to start the season as the QB1 there, but I don't know. Is there a world where you could see yourself spending like a late round pick on a Justin Fields just in case, right? You never know if he gets an opportunity or what happens with Russell Wilson. We've obviously seen him decline over the recent years, but is there a world where Justin Fields is worth a draft pick in fantasy drafts? Because, I mean, obviously the fantasy upside is there, like you said, but is there actually a chance that he gets into a starting lineup?
I don't think that there's going to be enough here. So like, I think what is very interesting is that I could see the Pittsburgh Steelers utilizing a Justin Fields in some packages the way that the Saints utilize Taysom Hill. But the caveat there is that Taysom Hill in fantasy football leagues, or at least in most fantasy football platforms, gets tight end eligibility. That gives you incentive. I think, you know, gives you more incentive to roster Taysom Hill than you do with Justin Fields, because I can't put Justin Fields in my tight end spot, even in a super flex league. Like, okay, so let's say we get, you know, a red zone package per game. What's the chance of converting that single red zone package into a score? Okay, so like you're throwing a guy into your lineup for what, 6 points? I also think, you know, just from a handcuff perspective, I'm generally not a handcuff your quarterback kind of person, unless this is a dynasty league where, you know, maybe you're in a dynasty super flex where you're not going to find any available bodies on waivers. I'm not buying into Justin Fields in 2023 or 2024. And to be honest, I hope I'm wrong because I really like Justin Fields, the football player. I think he adds that level of athletic ability. But you know what? Like, for as much as we also want to give Russell Wilson plenty of flack for not being as mobile as he once was, we actually saw him bounce back in a pretty decent way. I mean, the last 2 years, I do think he's dealt with some health issues, a knee injury, a hamstring injury. Saw him actually have the highest number of scrambles since we've seen him in the 2020 season back in Seattle. You know, an 80.3 PFF rushing grade. That's actually the highest of his entire NFL career. And I think a part of that, you know, definitely has to do with the willingness to once again, you know, make some scrambling attempts. And I don't know. I'm torn. And, you know, from the Steelers fan in me, I could not be more stoked. But I think for fantasy perspectives, long term, this is not going to be a fit that fantasy managers are happy about, because I just don't think we see Justin Fields hit the field unless things go really, really awry. And I don't know that that's how I project the season going.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And yeah, just an injury hold at best, I think is a good way to look at it. And yeah, I'm with you. I'm not looking to handcuff the quarterback position at all. I mean, really, unless it's like a potential high-end rookie that you're holding, knowing that they're going to get a starting shot later in their rookie season or something over like a kind of journeyman veteran. That's really the only scenario where I would be looking to do it. Potentially not so much here. I mean, it depends how deep rosters are and stuff like that, of course. But in your traditional size fantasy league, it's hard to imagine, barring injury, like you said, Justin Fields kind of taking over as the starter here for Russell Wilson. But not impossible. You never know where the season could go. So let's talk about another piece of non-wide receiver news here, really the only other piece, and that was Alexander Mattison signing with the Las Vegas Raiders. So we've kind of talked about Zamir White for a couple weeks in a row now, about how he's been the last man standing in Las Vegas, and there's potential for him to start the year as the Raiders' top running back, which is going to make him valuable for fantasy. With the team signing Alexander Mattison, I'll be curious if your feelings on White change at all, because I know for me, you know, Mattison, he was such a disappointment last season for fantasy compared to the expectations of him taking over as a starter for Dalvin Cook. He just consistently failed to deliver any kind of efficiency and eventually lost the starting job to Ty Chandler as well. So with Mattison in Vegas, do you think he gets another crack at a starting job and can redeem himself for fantasy purposes?
No, this has been season after season here that we're seeing big time efficiency issues for Alexander Mattison. This past season, Alexander Mattison ranked in the 50th percentile or lower in the following metrics: PFF rushing grade, yards after contact per attempt, gap grade, receiving grade, missed forced tackles on receptions, yards per route run, yards before contact, fumble rate, breakaway run rate, drop rate. It wasn't good. And I do think that this is probably the best landing or the best pairing in free agency. If you are a Zamir White believer, you wanted them to pick up an Alexander Mattison, because I do think that out of all the bodies remaining right now, Alexander Mattison is a non-threat to me. And, you know, I thought for as much, you know, the question marks as there were, you know, there were some sentiments that, you know, they want to go to a running back by committee approach, yada, yada, yada. They're not telling me anything that they want to do any kind of committee, because I do think you look at the kind of explosive playmaking ability that Zamir White has. Maybe they bring in another like third down receiving option, but what's Alexander Mattison going to do? I don't think there's a chance in the world that he's actually pushing for the starting gig. I think the only threat really now to Zamir White is, do they do something in the draft?
Yeah, that'll be the interesting one to watch, because there aren't like a lot of juicy running back spots left for these rookie running backs coming in. And yeah, in regards to Alexander Mattison, I mean, we've brought him up a couple times as well when we've been talking about like free agent landing spots. I think you even mentioned last week about how if you were hoping for somebody like a Tajay Spears to be a starting running back, then you're hoping that they bring in somebody like an Alexander Mattison, right? Instead of like a Tony Pollard, obviously. So this is a case where Zamir White, in a similar situation, right? They're bringing in this guy who has, like you said, the efficiency hasn't been there, hasn't been a consistent fantasy producer, has really struggled in the NFL. I have a hard time imagining him being consistently good for fantasy all of a sudden, especially in Las Vegas here on an offense that is not going to be as good as what he was on in Minnesota with those receiving weapons and the potential to score touchdowns. So yeah, I would much rather take a shot on Zamir White. I imagine ADP is going to reflect that. I haven't spent too much time looking into it. I don't know where fantasy drafters are going to get by June, July, but it's hard to imagine a world where Alexander Mattison is going to be higher drafted than Zamir White at this point.
I mean, he lost his job to Ty Chandler. So
yeah,
you know, he's been bad. And this is coming from a person that I thought, at least from a volume perspective, like Alexander Mattison was a big winner for me going into 2023. I thought because of that volume, like if efficiency were to continue to be a concern, that he'd overcome that. He's not going to get that kind of volume in this Raiders offense. I do think they want to run the ball. I think they want to, you know, play that kind of ball control style of team where, you know, they rely on the defense and play possession football. But I just, no.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Like, yeah.
And plus, did you guys see those biceps? I don't know if you saw the image that's going around right now of Zamir White. He was doing a presser and he looks like a guy that could literally just pick you up into the air, twist you into a balloon animal, and put you back down. I don't know. I love off-season, like, workout hype and all that stuff. And signing Alexander Mattison while I'm watching Zamir White look like he's got, what are those floaties? Like, inflatable pool floaties so you don't drown? Like, that's what his arms look like right now. It just seems like a non-contest.
Fair. Yeah, I haven't seen the Zamir White jacked up photo here, but I'll have to check it out. That potentially
highly recommend
my value in him for fantasy purposes. But yeah, like, I'm with you. I mean, volume again, that was always the draw with Mattison last year more than anything. And it could always come here in Las Vegas, you know, injuries happen and things like that. But it's just it's hard to imagine spending any kind of significant draft capital on an Alexander Mattison. If you want to bet on the ambiguity of the situation and in hopes that, you know, he turns it around and wins that camp battle, if it is one, then, you know, you could spend a late round pick on him. But again, not overly optimistic about Alexander Mattison either. All right, let's go on to the wide receivers in a second. But first, a quick shout out from our presenting sponsor, Fabric by Gerber Life. If you have a family, then you need to get term life insurance to protect them. It's one of the smartest financial decisions you can make, and the start of the new year is the perfect time to get it done so you can focus on whatever else the year has in store for you. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in just minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/fantasy. That's meetfabric.com/fantasy, meetfabric.com/fantasy. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Okay, let's talk some wide receivers. And this was, again, the one area really last week when we went over the free agency moves that was kind of lacking. There wasn't a ton of significant movement, but we got some now. We just had to be patient and wait. And this includes some of the trades as well. So let's start with the signings first. And we have to start with another one that we talked about being a possibility a few weeks back when we went over the ideal landing spots. And that is Marquise Brown does sign with the Kansas City Chiefs. So, again, we talked about this ideal landing spots. I'll kind of talk about some of the things that I liked about the potential for this one. But, Kate, with this one officially happening now, I know we preferred Gabe Davis after review of our two spots here for Kansas City. I was with you on the Gabe Davis over Marquise Brown situation. But with it now being official, Marquise Brown in Kansas City, how are you feeling about his fantasy potential here in Kansas City.
I'm not. I'm going to be honest. I am so out on Marquise Brown. And you can school me, right? But here's my line of thinking. I mean, he's had 100-plus targets, 4 or 5 seasons, played 14 or fewer games in 3 of 5 seasons. He's had a decline in yards after the catch per reception in each of his NFL seasons. Only 1 year with 1,000-plus receiving yards, 1 season with 70 or more receptions. And now he's going to an offense where I think he's a much better asset or a much, you know, like the greatest winner here of Marquise Brown signing with the Kansas City Chiefs is Patrick Mahomes and maybe Rashi Rice and maybe Travis Kelce, because it's one more weapon on the field that adds, you know, the speed element that I think, you know, they were missing, but also consistency. Like, you know, they had plenty of guys that like could get down the field, but you knew they weren't going to do anything once they got down there. Like Marquise Brown helps that case a lot, but I just like, I'm looking at all of his efficiency. He has scored 20-plus fantasy points in full PPR formats in just 9 of 72 regular season games among the 21 receivers with 500-plus targets since 2019. He ranks 19th in fantasy points per game, 20th in receiving yards per game, 17th in yards per reception. Like, what am I missing here? Because I think what we're going to get is a guy that you're going to draft and probably going to cost, I'm going to say, I'm this is just me totally spitballing, a 6th-round pick, a 7th-round pick maybe. And in your fantasy leagues, you're not going to know when to start him. I think he's going to win you a week and then or he's going to win you a week on the bench. So he's not going to win you a week. And then you're going to put him in your lineup the next week. He's going to dud. I think he does so much more for the Chiefs and the offense than he is going to do for anybody's fantasy teams. And you know what? As somebody who is rooting for Hollywood Brown, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I definitely understand the pessimism for Marquise Brown, right? Because he hasn't really shown it. He hasn't lived up to the expectations of that former first round pick, right? Even in Baltimore, you know, his best seasons, like you said, weren't amazing by any means. But I guess, you know, from if we're taking an optimistic viewpoint of it, I'm trying to see what the best outcome for Marquise Brown is. And it's hard to imagine him being anything more than like just a consistent kind of wide receiver 3 on a weekly basis, right? Like I think Rashi Rice definitely showed that he was capable of being a very consistent, startable wide receiver for fantasy, whether it's in that wide receiver 2 range or higher potentially as he develops. But for Marquise Brown, one of the things too with Kansas City's wide receivers is how they kind of rotated these guys. So if they're going to continue to rotate them, that's I think we're going to see a lot more inconsistency, obviously, if he's not going to get the playing time. If they lean into him being a full-time starter, I think that helps his case a little bit more. Obviously, you know, didn't get like a massive contract or anything like that, you know, forces them into playing him as a full-time player. But I think he still brings more than kind of what we got from their other wide receivers last year, outside of Rashi Rice, obviously. Kadarius Toney specifically, I don't think was what they wanted him to be at all. And luckily, they still won the Super Bowl. So it wasn't like a weakness that couldn't be overcome, obviously. But I think, you know, continuing down that path of utilizing those wide receivers that typically aren't like full-time NFL starters, it was a riskier path than the team was looking to potentially go here, especially if they're aiming to three-peat, right? But I think that's what you potentially get now in a player like Hollywood Brown, even though, again, hasn't quite lived up to those expectations. But I thought there were at least signs in Baltimore that he could be a nice fit here in Kansas City, just based on them using him more in that kind of yak role, right? Like you mentioned, his yards after catch definitely diminished in Arizona after getting traded from Baltimore. It was more, again, and how they utilized him as well. But I think there's more there from Marquise Brown than what we got the past couple of years. Maybe an optimistic viewpoint, but because he wasn't like a league leader in yak production or anything like that during his years with the Ravens, but he was at least better at it because of his role in that offense. And I think we could see something similar in Kansas City. And then, you know, you add in a healthy amount of deep targets, which he's definitely gotten throughout his career. He's been I think top 10 among wide receivers in targets 20 plus yards down the field. He just hasn't been great at hauling those targets in, right? And that's where he could stand to improve. I think he's 45th in catchable pass rate on those types of throws since entering the league. So ideally for him, you're seeing the team use him more as that yak guy in a full-time role, with those deep balls just kind of sprinkled in there. But there's at least, I think, a better chance that he can get back to like 2021 version of Marquise Brown here in Kansas City compared to what we've gotten the past two seasons, just because of the offense itself.
I mean, I do think, you know, obviously the upside's there. My concern definitely stems from the consistency element. Yeah. So my question is to you, if let's say that ADP does fall to like right around round six, how confident are you in investing in Marquise Brown? Like, let's say, I mean, at that point, you're probably looking at what your wide receiver two, wide receiver three. Do you feel good about Marquise Brown in that situation?
Not as my wide receiver two. I would feel really bad about that. Again, for me, like, I think best case scenario is wide receiver three, but I don't think we should be trying to buy him at that price, right? Because you're, I think, buying him at his ceiling at that point in drafts. If he falls later than that, then I'm looking more to take a chance on him. It, again, depends on who else is around in that range, but I want to get him at a lower cost than what I think he could be. Obviously, that's a very, you know, obvious statement, right? But yeah, if I'm paying market value for what I think he can actually turn into and what his ceiling is, then I think there's still that risk there with him that it's not quite worth paying that exact price. So more just hoping to get him at a cheaper discount, if that makes sense.
I think it does.
Okay. Yeah. I realize I said something very, very obvious there in that we're hoping to get guys cheaper than what they could potentially be. But I just think
sometimes we got to go back to basics, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But like you think of a guy like that specifically, I just think that there's boom bust potential there, right? And you have to factor in that bust potential with him, especially that he hasn't given us that consistency in recent years. So that's kind of where I'm at with Marquise Brown. So slightly optimistic, but I'm hedging a little bit as well. So all right, let's move on to another wide receiver here. And Marquise Brown was a relatively cheap contract for Kansas City in free agency, but we did have one team spend pretty big to get their guy. The Tennessee Titans signed Calvin Ridley to a 4-year contract worth $92 million. Kate, the Titans are making moves. Last week, we talked about them bringing in Tony Pollard and discussed how that offense is going to depend a lot on how Will Levis develops in year two. Adding Calvin Ridley to the mix with DeAndre Hopkins and year three Treylon Burks there as well, they're making sure they leave no stone unturned in figuring out if Levis can pull this off. So how are you feeling about the Titans receivers now for fantasy purposes after this move?
I'm actually kind of intrigued. And you know what, as somebody who's like dabbled in curiosity regarding Will Levis, who like big bodied guy, like underrated mobility as a big quarterback here, I actually think like this entire way that the Titans have approached this offseason has been a huge, huge win for Will Levis, who I actually think is like probably a late round quarterback target, at least as it stands today. They've made investments in the offensive line. They're surrounding him with weapons. And I think suddenly when you look at this team, you say, even if I have an aging DeAndre Hopkins, I have Calvin Ridley, who, you know, I wasn't convinced he could be a wide receiver one, but when you're lining up opposite of DeAndre Hopkins, that kind of changes the narrative a little bit. Suddenly you have Treylon Burks, who I still think has plenty of upside. I think what the Titans need to do, move him back to the slot, which is where he thrived in college. It doesn't seem natural, you know, that he would be a slot receiver because of his size, but that is where he thrived. And I think taking the load off him as forcing him to be an X receiver just because of his size, like that's not what he does. That's not his game. I think this is a win for the entire offense, but Calvin Ridley in general, he's kind of an interesting one, right? Like he's a very interesting player, and I don't necessarily know how I feel about him specifically for fantasy. Ranked 49th with 0.36 fantasy points per route run, ranked 54th in fantasy points per target, was a wide receiver 18 last year. Like, you know, I don't know. It's hard because he's not going to be a guy that I think is going to consistently win you weeks, especially with the number of weapons they have. And, you know, for as much as I do think that the addition of him helps Will Levis, you still have the question mark of Will Levis, who has a ginormous arm and you know, can definitely connect on some big plays with Calvin Ridley, I think. The only question, and this has been kind of a predominant one throughout Ridley's career, is can he manage the consistency aspect?
Yeah, that's been definitely an issue for Calvin Ridley. And somebody that, again, like you mentioned last year, not quite what fantasy managers were hoping for. Like you said, wide receiver 18, but he's kind of done this more from a volume standpoint than anything. He stayed healthy. He played, you know, pretty much every game, I think every game last year, and it was able to rack up production that way. But I think, you know, as far as hoping for that wide receiver one upside on a weekly basis, it was far from that. So when I look at him now joining Tennessee, I think they're, you know, I'm relatively optimistic that Will Levis can be a good NFL quarterback, but I don't know that it's, you know,
don't know.
Yeah.
Like, we have no idea.
That's the thing, right? There's huge question marks about it. Like, there was moments last year, but then there was also a lot of stuff where you're like, okay, this could be, you know, where he's at in his NFL career, not necessarily ever a top 12 guy or anything like that, but now there's weapons at least for him to be productive. And like you said, I like it for Will Levis as a potential late round quarterback for fantasy purposes, just because of the weapons around him. But whether he can sustain fantasy relevance for guys like Hopkins, Ridley, Burks, as all three of them, I have less, I guess, confidence in. And for Ridley specifically, I'm not like a huge Calvin Ridley fan. I wasn't heading into last year either. So I just can't see myself being too excited for him this year once I kind of put my rankings together. I think he could be fine for NFL purposes. Like you said, there's not that wide receiver one expectation for him in Tennessee, but as the wide receiver two in that Tennessee offense, what that looks like for fantasy purposes, I guess I'm not as optimistic about it. And he's just been somebody that hasn't delivered above expectations or even close to expectations the past two seasons that he's played. And that's kind of where I come down on Calvin Ridley, and I have a hard time seeing myself drafting him again this year.
I'll say he's going to be a guy that I probably have on a lot of best ball teams. And that's probably where I'm going to leave him.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fine, because we talked about it a lot last year. We were doing the previews, right? Like, the frustration of having to decide when and when not to start Calvin Ridley was real. And we saw that in his numbers, and looking at, you know, again, like fantasy points versus expectations last year, he was a negative 34.6, tied for eighth among wide receivers. We saw that the year prior when he was with Atlanta as well. It was I think he led the league as the lowest fantasy points over expectations for that season as well. So again, more of a volume guy. How much volume there's going to be in that Tennessee passing offense, we'll have to see, but I can't imagine it's a high ceiling there for passing offense. Yeah. let's go to one of the smaller moves here. Curtis Samuel, relatively smaller, but Curtis Samuel signs with the Buffalo Bills. They do love their slot targets, and Samuel has been at his best in his career working out of the slot. I'm a Khalil Shakir fan. I don't know about you. Like, I thought he showed a lot of promise there in year two. I was kind of hopeful for him to be a potential breakout for this season, but I don't know. It probably less volume available for him now with Curtis Samuel coming in. You got Dalton Kincaid in there as well, who had 60% of his routes come from the slot as a rookie. So I'd be curious how you feel about it. But for me personally, I think this is a situation maybe where we see all these guys, you know, get their fair shot there in the slot and getting targets equally, which makes it less ideal for fantasy, but probably good for the Bills and Josh Allen at least. So any interest in Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir for fantasy purposes?
I think this is probably, again, one of those instances that you're not going to be overly happy about just because of the fact that I think all of these guys are going to split touches. And I do think that what is good for the Buffalo Bills offense and what is good for Josh Allen is not necessarily what is great for the individual players that you're going to be targeting in fantasy drafts. So I don't have any interest in Curtis Samuel. I think he's going to play more of the gadget role, especially with the way that they have a number of these guys that can rotate in and out of the slot. Like I think that he brings an element of creativity to the offense, but not a guy that I'm looking to roster in fantasy, even if he is a good wide receiver. He's always been one of these guys that I think is much more talented than the fantasy production is ever going to let on. And it's probably especially going to be the case surrounded by this number of weapons.
Yeah, no, I'm in the exact same boat with you for that one for sure. So yeah, I don't think there's a ton to good to go over there for Curtis Samuel, but I do like it for Josh Allen and the Bills. But we can move to one that maybe there's going to be some more optimism about, depends on health, obviously, but Mike Williams, was released from the Los Angeles Chargers and then signed with the New York Jets. So Jets needed someone other than Garrett Wilson at wide receiver. I know, you know, quarterback was obviously a huge problem for them last year. So hard to knock guys too much like Alan Lazard or Xavier Gibson. But I think it's a pretty clear upgrade with Williams coming in as long as he's healthy, right? And that's obviously been the biggest issue for him in his career. But we've seen the fantasy impact that he can make when he's on the field. 15.4 points per game in 2021 across 16 games for wide receiver 13, and 13.6 points per game in 2022 across 13 games. That was good for wide receiver 22 in points per game. And then even last year, obviously just the three games, but 16.7 points per game was a really nice start for him before getting hurt. The caveat with Mike Williams, it's always going to be health. But how do you feel, I guess, about Mike Williams signing with the Jets? Do you like the fit? Are you excited at all about him for fantasy purposes?
I am a little bit intrigued. And I will say, I think out of all the potential fits, this is a good one. You could have maybe been hoping secretly that he would wind up back with the Chargers, which, you know, obviously there's been plenty of production there when he's been healthy. And undoubtedly, he would have a very monstrous target share. They have literally no other pass catchers in their offense. So maybe from a volume standpoint, this isn't the best fit for Mike Williams. But I do think that, like, in terms of lining him up against or opposite a very talented receiver like Garrett Wilson, it's a good fit. And I mean, before that torn ACL, this was a good tenure for Mike Williams. You feel bad. He was actually, over three games, 53.1% catch rate, which by far a career high. He was on pace for a monster game here when he tore the ACL. He had seven catches, 121 receiving yards, and a touchdown on 67% of offensive snaps. Like, he looked good. He looked really good. And, you know, I think Mike Williams, interestingly, for kind of the narrative about health, he hasn't really missed all that much time, all things considered. Like, I think you would have thought that he'd play, you know, fewer than 10 games in most of his NFL seasons. That hasn't been the case. But I think we know the upside. We know that he can score a lot of touchdowns. I think when you look at the scoring potential of this Jets offense, like on paper, this looks like an absolutely incredible offense for a guy that, you know, efficiency has generally been like not a huge thing for him because he's a big play, he's a contested catch guy that doesn't bode well for your efficiency. But there is something to be said for lining up against Garrett or, you know, opposite Garrett Wilson like that. That might create some openings here. I don't know. I like Mike Williams, and I do think all of these question marks about health, about age, about adapting to a new offense, I'm kind of wondering if this price tag isn't going to be one that we can get behind for Mike Wilson or Mike Williams.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think those things are going to be kind of baked into his ADP once things start to solidify come, you know, fantasy draft season. And yeah, there's risk there, but I think that's going to be baked into his price as well. And that's where I feel like I'll probably be okay taking a shot on a Mike Williams, more so than I would with even Marquise Brown, right? Like, if we're assuming that Aaron Rodgers is healthy, that's obviously a significant upgrade for the entire offense from what they got last year in the Jets. Now, again, you have to hope for health, and yeah, sure, playing at MetLife, it probably increases the risk a little bit. MetLife turf is caught a lot of shit over recent years for being poor and causing injuries, but you know, again, picturing Aaron Rodgers healthy under center, Mike Williams, Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, like, it is a really nice offense to thrive and be productive and score touchdowns and fantasy points. So I'm with you. I like the fit for Mike Williams. Now you got me calling him Mike Wilson, but yeah, it's again, probably not, you know, necessarily the ideal fit, but it's a nice fit and one that I could definitely get behind for fantasy.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, and generally speaking, my question mark with all these wide receivers, sometimes it's a little bit team dependent. So like, if you are in a situation where you draft, you know, heavy wide receiver early on in your drafts, you take a break, you stack up on some running backs, and you come back to Mike Williams as like your wide receiver 4, right? And he's one of these guys that, like, any given week, you could probably just pop in the flex. If you have a fairly stable central receiving core, if your wide receiver 1 and wide receiver 2 are fairly stable receiving assets, not the boom bust types, I think that's the kind of roster that, like, all right, now we can consider Mike Williams a very viable flex play because we've already got, you know, a relatively safe foundation. If you're drafting like some boom or bust question marks early on, and sometimes that's like, you know, sometimes that's the approach, like high upside, high reward, but that's definitely not going to be the roster that you're trying to incorporate Mike Williams to. So I think it's definitely a team build question mark. It's a value question mark. Like, how far does he fall down draft boards? But I mean, when you're talking about a guy that you can probably draft in the mid to late rounds and he could win you a week, like, that's what I'm looking for out of the flex. I'm not necessarily looking for the most consistency. I'm looking for guys that on any given week can help me demolish my opponent. And I do think Mike Williams still has some of those to his credit as long as he's entering the season healthy.
Yeah, definitely. He definitely has that big play, a big week upside potential. And then again, like you said, if he's healthy, there's a lot of consistency that we can get out of him as well, especially with Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball, if he, you know, can continue to play at a relatively high level. So I like it. Couple more wide receiver moves that happened here. Kate, your Steelers have been very busy. I imagine you have been busy as well covering the Steelers. Deontay Johnson is traded to the Carolina Panthers. I like how last week we all had our players on the Steelers that we were kind of optimistic about with Russ at quarterback. And that was immediately crushed for me because I had Deontay Johnson from that group. So throw that out the window. But Deontay gets traded to the Panthers, who are now looking at a wide receiver core of him, Adam Thielen, and Jonathan Mingo, with year 2 Bryce Young at quarterback. So Deontay Johnson, he's been more of kind of that flex play over the past 2 seasons, deeper flex play with mostly Kenny Pickett at quarterback. Any optimism from you, Kate, that he can get back closer to what we saw from him in the years prior to that and be a reliable fantasy starter again in Carolina?
Here's part of what has made Deontay Johnson so perfect for fantasy is the opportunity for volume, right? Deontay Johnson has not necessarily been a, you know, like George Pickens literally led the league in terms of yards per reception. That is not Deontay Johnson's game. The Deontay Johnson's game is a volume game. And I do think that, man, if we're looking in terms of potential landing spots to get him some volume, I mean, you've got to be thinking of the Carolina Panthers as one of the best places he could have possibly landed, because there is absolutely no competition at wide receiver at this point. Even if they have to bring in a wide receiver through the draft, it's a deep draft class, but I'm looking at, you know, an aging Adam Thielen, Jonathan Mingo, Laviska Shenault, Terrace Marshall, Rashard Higgins, who I didn't even know was a Carolina Panther. I think there's a lot of potential here for a you know, nice situation volume wise for Deontay Johnson is just kind of one of these safety valves. Now, my only concern about this, of course, is the fact that there's not a lot lining up opposite Deontay Johnson. So that's probably not going to bode any better for his efficiency. I think it's got to be a volume game, but I mean, that's the beauty is that we already know he can handle volume. He's already been the focal point of an offense. I mean, you know, this season it was an exception. He missed some time due to injury, but three different seasons of his five years in the NFL has had 140 plus targets. Like, yeah, I think he's going to be in every down option for Bryce Young, and he's going to look to him early and often. I think, again, maybe this is just me being a little bit optimistic today, but I think he's going to be a huge value. Like, full PPR, let's ride, baby.
Yeah, no, I like Deontay Johnson, and you got to obviously hope for some development there for year two, Bryce Young, right? But last year, what we saw from Bryce Young, those kind of low A-dot throws, right? I think it fits perfectly for Deontay Johnson if that continues to be his game. And, you know, Deontay Johnson, his best season 2021 with Ben Roethlisberger, who had a notoriously low average depth of target that season. Everything was short. That's kind of where Deontay Johnson thrived, right? The short intermediate areas of the field were the places that he did the most damage and he was able to earn the most targets. So I'm with you. I think Deontay Johnson should be the top target for the Carolina Panthers. I know Adam Thielen had a really nice year last year as he's gotten older as well, but I think Deontay Johnson makes the most sense. And I really like the fit here for Bryce Young specifically, like you said, being that safety valve and guy that he can rely on a regular basis, who can get open and run good routes and stay relatively close to the line of scrimmage as he gets more comfortable in the NFL, Bryce Young. So yeah, I'm with you. I think Deontay Johnson could have a really nice year here, a nice bounce back year as a really good fit for Carolina going forward.
Yeah. I think this was a solid trade decision. And you know what, like, again, for Adam Thielen being old man Rivers, he's 33 years old and he just posted another 1,000-yard season, 100 plus receptions. Like, would you put it past Deontay Johnson to have a 100 catch season in 2024? Because I wouldn't.
Yeah, like I said, like if this ends up being like a similar kind of operating offense to what those 2021 Steelers were, that is perfect for Deontay Johnson, right? So that's the hope there. And I think it's kind of trending in that direction. So
he's not going to be a sexy pick in your fantasy leagues. No. Like, nobody's going to be rushing to the draft table to bring up their Deontay Johnson sticker. So once again, like, all of these signings, I think really solid, honestly, in this second wave of free agency. A lot of really smart fits, I think, from these NFL offices.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. All right, one more move that happened was Keenan Allen getting traded to the Chicago Bears. So Chargers, I mean, they've emptied their wide receiver closet here. It's basically Quentin Johnston and Josh Palmer now, and obviously wasn't the season that we thought we could get from Quentin Johnston in year one, but we could talk about the Chargers in a second here. Looking at the Bears specifically now, adding Keenan Allen to that offense with DJ Moore, it is going to be interesting for wide receiver purposes. It seems like almost assuredly they're going Caleb Williams now at quarterback after trading Justin Fields. So the big question, I think, is going to be, can Caleb Williams sustain two fantasy relevant wide receivers on a consistent basis that we feel good enough about keeping these guys locked into our lineups like they were last year? Because from a points per game basis, Keenan Allen and DJ Moore were both wide receiver ones. Now being on the same offense with a rookie quarterback, gotta imagine expectations are slightly lower for these guys. But any optimism that you from Caleb Williams and company that you think this can be, we could get two starting wide receivers out of Chicago.
I do think this is probably going to be a situation where the fit, what Keenan Allen does for this offense, is generally a little bit more exciting than what he's doing for our fantasy teams. Now, I mean, DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, both top eight fantasy wide receivers, both had 130 plus targets last year. Both, you know, I think just really talented NFL wide receivers, but they're definitely going to eat into each other's, you know, workload. I don't know that we can necessarily count on a rookie quarterback, even one of Caleb Williams' stature, to feed wide receivers. Generally speaking, like, that just, you know, with rookie quarterbacks, we don't see a ton of receivers all be viable fantasy options, especially when they're drafted in these higher ranges. Like, I think everybody was kind of surprised when we saw the kind of success out of Nico Collins, you know, Tank Dell with CJ Stroud, who was touted, you know, as Mr. Accuracy. I'm having a hard time getting on board of either of these. I'm not quite sure I have a great vision for how they're going to be utilized in junction with each other. But I do think, and I'm kind of thinking about these guys in terms of their fantasy value down the road and what their ADP is going to look like down the road. I think because of that, we might have like some potential value here. I want to see who is the guy. I think DJ Moore is probably going to have the edge just due to familiarity in the offense. But yeah, I don't have a lot of strong feelings about this for fantasy, other than I want to see who falls further in fantasy drafts, and I'll probably draft that guy. Like,
I think that's the way to do it, right? Like, it's going to be hard to bet on one more so than the other, but I think you just take the discount here. And yeah, like you said, I think, you know, the most optimistic or ideal comp for what we get from Keenan Allen and DJ Moore in 2024 is probably Nico Collins and Tank Dell as that most optimistic outcome. But it's rare, right, from a rookie quarterback. CJ Stroud performed really well as a rookie right out the gate and all season long, really. I mean, a step down from that is probably like 2022 Brock Purdy, which was on a much smaller sample size, right? He was able to keep those fantasy options afloat in San Francisco. We got decent numbers from Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert in their rookie years for multiple wide receivers, but it's not high expectations, right? And with both of these guys being number one wide receivers last year for fantasy, I think we have to temper those expectations. It's definitely hard to imagine one of them being left out on a weekly basis because they're both so good, right? But I think that's going to be the reality of the situation as Caleb Williams acclimates to the NFL and develops, but it is a good thing for his development. So if he can come in and be that number one overall pick and live up to that hype right away, then there's definitely room for both of these guys to produce in a way that CJ Stroud was able to do with Dell and Collins. But it's a less likely outcome, right? And that's just the reality of the situation as players acclimate from college to the NFL. So tempering expectations for both of them. I'll be curious to see where they're, again, another situation where ADP is going to start to solidify in the coming months, and we'll start to see where these guys are going. But I'm with you in that I'm probably not taking the first shot on the Bears wide receiver, but I might take a shot on the second one.
Here's the better question for you, John. Not which Bears wide receiver do we like? I think the biggest question is not to do with the Bears at all. I think it's, where can we draft Justin Herbert? And Justin Herbert obviously has been tremendously productive throughout his entire course within the NFL. You have a new head coach come in, a new offensive coordinator that you know wants to ram the ball down their opponents' throats.
Yeah.
They've stripped the entire core of weaponry that Justin Herbert has been throwing to. The most experienced receiver on that offense is Josh Palmer. Like, I mean, I don't know how we can reasonably go into 2024 looking at Justin Herbert as a top eight quarterback option, given that I feel like we're in like the golden era of, you know, potential quarterback production, and I'm looking at Justin Herbert, and I'm just thinking, like, how do I justify a high-end pick when scheme fit tells me they're probably going to run the ball a lot? Maybe that sets up some, you know, significant efficiency in the passing game, but they don't have anybody to throw the ball to. Like, they're going to walk away with some type of receiver, whether that be, you know, Malik Nabers at five, or they trade back and get, you know, Romo Dunze, or like there's going to be a receiver there. But we know that, you know, first round receivers, like, it's not a given that they'll immediately translate to the field. They already learned that lesson last year with Quentin Johnston. I don't know where I'm drafting Justin Herbert in 2024.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I love Herbert. I love him as a player, as an NFL quarterback. For fantasy, I just continue to cool on him year after year. And what they did this offseason,
it makes me sad. I'm sad.
It does. It is. Absolutely. And it doesn't help what they did this offseason, right? I think for me, I can't imagine him being inside my top 10 for fantasy. And I think there are going to be better options out there available, especially if, you know, we assume somebody like Anthony Richardson's going to be healthy. We saw the upside with him. We saw what Jordan Love can do as a receiver and supporting all his weapons and producing for fantasy. So there's guys that I think I'm going to be more willing to take a shot on in that range. And I don't think it's going to be Justin Herbert. I just think that even if we assume that they're going to spend up and get a wide receiver, which I think they are, whether it's Nabers or Dunze, Brock Bowers, who knows, there's going to be another weapon added to that wide receiver room, potentially some development from Quentin Johnston, but how much of a step he's going to take, I think needs to be factored in there. I can't imagine it's a significant step after what we saw last year. So, and then like you said, it's going to be a run heavy offense as well. So yeah, he's outside the top 10 for me, unfortunately, Mr. Herbert.
What a world are we living in, man? I'm depressed now.
I know. I'm sorry. You came in so optimistic, and yeah, unfortunately.
All I need now is a Brandon Ayuk trade to get me back on top. Let's go.
Oh, Brandon Ayuk trade. Wow. Okay. Do you have a favorite spot for Brandon Ayuk?
Pittsburgh Steelers, baby. Come on.
Of course. Yeah.
Let's make it happen.
That would be nice, right? Man, yeah, it would be hard not to be excited about that. Brandon Ayuk, I feel like wherever he goes, he's a good enough wide receiver to continue being fantasy relevant, but Pittsburgh would be a nice one. That would be very nice. So yeah, we'll see what happens. If that trade does happen, we'll give an update on it in the coming weeks here, but that's going to do it for today's episode, going over the wave 2 free agency moves and trades that happen. Thank you everybody for tuning in. And next week we are going to start talking about the NFL draft and all the potential fantasy assets coming out. So be sure to tune in for that one. Definitely one of, if not my favorite topic to go over. So I'm pretty pumped for that topic. Kate, thank you as always for coming on here and dropping knowledge on us all and helping us sort through the fantasy moves that we've been getting this off season. So much appreciated as always.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy talking a little free agency. I'm just hopeful that next week we're going to have a Brandon Ayuk to the Steelers shirt to talk about. I don't know. Manifest.
That would be fun. It would be a fun one for sure. So I'm sure you'll cover it over on the Steel Curtain as well. And please remind everybody where they can find more of you and your work as well before you go.
Yeah, give me a follow on Twitter at Kate Majuk. That's MAGDZIUK. Doing all things Pittsburgh Steelers over at Behind the Steel Curtain, floating around on PFF. And of course, I will be back to hopefully talk about that trade next week.
That's the dream. So yeah, Kate will be back. And then for me, all kinds of content over on pff.com, starting to turn my focus now on the rookies as well. So today I released the analytics strengths and weaknesses for the top 24 wide receivers coming out in this class. I think tomorrow we'll have kind of the sleepers from an analytics standpoint in this rookie wide receiver class. So check those out. There's some fun numbers in there to kind of dig through as people try to build their boards and utilize this information. So yeah. And then if you are looking for a PFF subscription or mock draft simulator, please use the promo code 30MDS to get 30% off that subscription as well. So that's going to do it for us. We will see you all next week. And until then, peace out.